Hello, and welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America, designed for people like you who are learning American English. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz in Washington. Every day of the year on this program, we bring you news from and about the United States and the world. Because this program is produced for learners of American English, like you, we speak a little slower than normal, and we use words and phrases that are easy to understand. Listen to the program, then practice saying the words and sentences the way we do. It's a free and easy way to improve your American English skills every day of the year. This is what you will hear on today's program. In our weekly higher education report, Jill Robbins will tell us about some immigrants to the United States who are combining cultures and cuisines in the kitchen. Then you will hear Words and Their Stories, one of our most popular programs. Anna Mateo will tell us about American English phrases that use the word bullet. And finally, we will present The Making of a Nation. This week in our series, we will continue the story of the administration of President Franklin Delano Roosevelt. So you can see, as always, we have a lot for you today. So let's get started. Now, with our weekly higher education report, here is Jill Robbins.
VOA talked with two students in the culinary arts program at Carlos Rosario International Public Charter School. Maxim Ola is from the Ukraine, and Isidro Dubon comes from Central America. They are studying to become chefs and work hard to make their American dreams come true. Maxim Ola was an actor and dancer in the theater in his home country, Ukraine. He fell in love with an American woman who was in the Peace Corps. Ola immigrated to the U.S. when she finished her service in the Ukraine. That summer, he showed his dancing skill in the Smithsonian Folklife Festival.
I came to the U.S. because I married an American girl and she finished her Peace Corps service, and then we have small project in the Smithsonian Festival, and we represent Ukrainian country on the Smithsonian Festival 4 years ago.
Ola found a different culture in the U.S. and learned to treat others differently than he had at home.
My wife told me it's different language, different culture, different mentality, and she told me, you need to respect everybody, hear people more gentle to each other.
Ola started to study English soon after he arrived.
When I came here, I don't speak any kind of words, just few words like, hello, my name is Max, and goodbye. I'm international program, cuisine. We study about each country's food, astronomy, history, techniques, and this is, for me, it's very help because every people started to cook in the French. This is history. And for me, new techniques, kind of techniques like bowling or macro cook or something like that, this is new and interesting for me.
Ola dreams of owning his own restaurant or a food truck one day.
My goal, I want to open small business, a food truck, Eastern European food truck, maybe American. If I study a lot recipe, maybe I mix it, for example, each country and American. I forgot name that word, but it's like fusion. Oh, yeah.
Although he has a busy schedule of study, Ola finds time to keep up his Ukrainian dancing.
On a Saturday, I work in Ukrainian school. I teach folk dance children. I have 150 people. Yeah, I would teach Ukrainian folk dance. This is my hobby.
Isidro Dubon is like many students at Carlos Rosario, a public charter school in Washington, D.C. He comes from Central America. Born in Honduras, Dubon came to the U.S. when he was 16 years old. Dubon's brother had lived in the U.S. for some time. He encouraged Isidro to join him. Dubon's reason for coming to the U.S. was simple enough. He came to America, as many immigrants do, searching for two things, a better job and a better life. Before coming to the U.S., he expected to work hard. He hoped to one day buy his own house. He didn't speak English, but he did not think it would be a problem. When Dubon arrived, he was surprised to discover that it was very difficult to find work. He had not thought that his lack of English skills would stop him from getting a job. Dubon began studying in the English program at Carlos Rosario. After some time, he found work as a dishwasher in a restaurant. He worked hard and received promotions. Dubon's dream had been to buy his own house. Every time he paid rent for an apartment, he would say to himself, "Wow, that's too much money." Dubon decided to quit school and find a second job so that he could save money. His English classes at Carlos Rosario helped him understand how to build his credit rating, the most important factor for a home buyer in the U.S.
So after I found a job, I started to build my credit. And then after 3 years, I started to look at a house for sale. After 5 years, that process, I found a beautiful house, and I bought it. And then when I had all this, I quit one job, and I returned to the school.
When he returned, Dubon enrolled in the Culinary Arts Program at Carlos Rosario. He is taking a course called Culinary Arts Fundamentals, which exposes students to theoretical and hands-on training in culinary arts. The school put on a lunch at the end of the fall semester. It is called Achieving the Dream. During the lunch, students, families, local politicians, and community organizers came to the school. The goal was to give students practical experience preparing, cooking, and serving food. The lunch also served as an opportunity to ask for donations to support the school. Carlos Rosario is a public, nonprofit school that has had funding problems before. In the mid-1990s, the school had to close for a year because public funding was cut to adult education programs in Washington, D.C. Ola and Dubon assisted in preparing the lunch and worked as servers during the event. But problems came up during the lunch. Dubon's partner had to go help in the kitchen, so Dubon had to serve alone. He had trouble at first, but he says that he remembered his experience working in restaurants. The lunch, said a smiling Dubon, was a success. The chefs who teach him were happy with his performance. Dubon and Ola are both grateful for the education they have received at Carlos Rosario International Public Charter School. They are working hard to reach their dreams. I'm Jill Robbins.
Thanks, Jill. Now it's time for Words and Their Stories. Today, Ana Mateo tells us about the many American English expressions that use the word bullet.
Now, of course, a bullet is what you shoot out of a gun, and it comes out fast. In fact, that used to be the way to describe the speed of the superhero Superman. He is faster than a speeding bullet.
Faster than a speeding bullet. More powerful than a locomotive.
And that is why very fast trains are often called bullet trains. Bullets are not only known for their speed, they are also known for their ability to kill. However, not all bullets are bad. A magic bullet, sometimes called a silver bullet, is something that solves a difficult problem easily. We often use these two expressions in the negative, because usually there is not one thing that solves a difficult problem. For example, let's say a country is suffering from a weak economy. People lose their jobs. Some families lose their homes. This leads to an increase in mental and physical health issues. After many years of such conditions, people want change. So they protest in the streets. Yet there is no silver bullet to cure all these problems. To take a bullet for someone is a good thing. Well, the thought behind this expression is a good thing. It means you are willing to put yourself in harm's way to protect someone else. This often sounds like a tough expression. Mothers might not say, "I'd take a bullet for their child," but they would. People in the military, however, might say, "I'd take a bullet for you, man." Now, we know that sweating is our body's way of keeping cool. But we also sweat when we're nervous. When you sweat bullets, you are very nervous or anxious about something. If you dodge a bullet, you have successfully avoided a problem, but barely. For example, let's say you get up late for work. Your boss has already warned you that if you come in late again, you may get fired. When you arrive at the office, you are sweating bullets. You are nervous and very worried that your boss will fire you. However, you need not worry. As it turns out, your boss is out sick that day. You have dodged a bullet. To ease the pain of a difficult situation, people are sometimes asked to bite the bullet. This actually sounds like really bad advice. What is the origin of this expression? The story may go back to the American Civil War, or even earlier. War is painful, and our bodies have many natural responses to pain. We tighten our fists, tense our muscles, or clench our teeth. Back during the Civil War, pain-killing drugs were often hard to find. So doctors working on the battlefield would give their patients a piece of wood to squeeze or something soft to bite on. Many times the nearest thing was a soft lead bullet. Hollywood movies helped to keep this expression alive. In old Western movies, more than one rugged cowboy was seen biting a bullet, perhaps drinking some strong whiskey, while removing an arrow from his body. But that is in the movies. In modern conversation, biting the bullet means to accept a difficult decision or situation. It hints that a person has been putting off this difficult decision. And that brings us to the end of Words and Their Stories. If you want to perfect your English, there is no silver bullet. You must simply practice and study as much as you can. Hopefully, you will do that with us at VOA Learning English. I'm Ana Mateo.
Like the speed of sound, feet can keep on the ground.
Thanks, Anna. Now we present The Making of a Nation. Franklin Roosevelt's New Deal policies during the 1930s changed the face of American government. The new president and the Congress passed legislation that helped farmers, strengthened the banking system, and supplied jobs for millions of workers. One of the results of Roosevelt's policies was a stronger movement of organized labor in America. This week in our series, Sarah Long and Doug Johnson continue the story of the presidency of Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
Labor leaders had little success in organizing workers in the United States during the 1920s. Three Republican presidents and a national wave of conservatism prevented them from gaining many members or increasing their negotiating power. In 1929, organized labor fell even further with the beginning of the Great Economic Depression. By 1933, America's labor unions had less than 3 million members. But by the end of the 1930s, more than 10.5 million American workers belonged to unions.
New laws proposed by the Roosevelt administration made the labor growth possible. The National Industrial Recovery Act of 1933 gave labor leaders the right to organize and represent workers. The Supreme Court ruled that the law was illegal. But another law, the Wagner Labor Relations Act of 1935, helped labor unions to increase their power. Most of the leaders of America's traditional labor unions were slow to understand their new power. They were conservative men. They represented workers with certain skills, such as woodworkers or metal workers. They did little to organize workers with other kinds of skills. But a new group of labor leaders used the new laws to organize unions by industries, not by skills. They believed that workers would have much more power if they joined forces with other workers in the same factory to make common demands. These new leaders began to organize unions for the automobile industry, the steel industry, and other major industries.
The leader of the new movement was the head of the mine workers, John L. Lewis. Lewis was a powerful leader with a strong body and strong opinions. He had begun to work in the coal mines at the age of 12. Lewis rose to become a powerful and successful leader of the mine workers, but he was concerned about workers in other industries as well. And he believed that most of the leaders in the American Federation of Labor were doing little to help them. For this reason, Lewis and the heads of several other unions formed their own group to organize unions by industry, not by skills. They called their group the Congress of Industrial Organizations, the CIO, and they tried immediately to gain members.
The CIO successfully organized the workers in several major industries, but it succeeded only by hard work and struggle. The CIO's first big battle was against the giant automobile company General Motors. Late in 1935, workers at several General Motors factories began a sit-down strike at their machines to demand better pay and working conditions. After 45 days, General Motors surrendered. It recognized that the Automobile Workers Union had the right to represent GM workers, and it agreed to negotiate a new work agreement.
The struggle at the Ford Motor Company was more bitter. Ford Company guards beat union organizers and workers. But the Ford Company finally agreed to negotiate with the new union. The same story was true in the steel industry. But the new labor leaders succeeded in becoming the official representatives of steel workers throughout the country. By 1938, the CIO had won its battle to organize major industries. In later years, it would join with the more traditional American Federation of Labor to form the organization that remains the most important labor group in America today, the AFL-CIO.
President Roosevelt was not always an active supporter of organized labor, but neither was he a constant supporter of big business, like the three Republican presidents before him. In fact, Roosevelt spoke out often against the dangers of big business in a democracy. These speeches caused great concern among many of the traditional business and conservative leaders of the nation. And Roosevelt's increasingly progressive policies in 1935 made many richer Americans fear that the president was a socialist, a dictator, or a madman. Former President Herbert Hoover, for example, denounced Roosevelt's New Deal policies as an attack on the whole idea of individual freedoms. The family of business leader J.P. Morgan told visitors not to say Roosevelt's name in front of Morgan. They said it would make his blood pressure go up.
This conservative opposition to Roosevelt grew steadily throughout 1935 and 36. Many Americans were honestly worried that Roosevelt's expansion of government was the first step to dictatorship. They feared that Roosevelt and the Democrats were trying to gain power as the Nazis did in Germany, the fascists in Italy, or the communists in Russia.
The Republican Party held its presidential convention in the summer of 1936. The party delegates chose Alfred Landon to oppose Roosevelt for president. Mr. Landon was the governor of the farm state of Kansas. He was a successful oil producer with conservative business views. But he was open to some of the social reforms of Roosevelt's New Deal. Republicans hoped he would appeal to average Americans who supported mild reforms, but feared Roosevelt's social policies. The Democrats nominated Roosevelt and Vice President John Garner to serve a second term.
The main issue in the presidential campaign of 1936 was Franklin Roosevelt himself. Roosevelt campaigned across the country like a man sure that he would win. He laughed with the cheering crowds and told them that the New Deal had helped improve their lives. In New York, Roosevelt made a major speech promising to continue the work of his administration if he was re-elected.
Of course we will continue to seek to improve working conditions for the workers of America. Of course we will continue to work for cheaper electricity in the homes and on the farms of America. For better and cheaper transportation, for low interest rates, for sounder home financing, for better banking, for the regulation of security issues, for reciprocal trade among nations, and my friends, for all of these, we have only just begun to fight.
The Republican candidate, Alfred Landon, began his campaign by saying that many of Roosevelt's New Deal programs were good. But he said that a Republican administration could do them better and for less money. However, Landon's words became much stronger as the campaign continued. He attacked many of Roosevelt's programs. The campaign became increasingly bitter. Roosevelt said his opponents cared only about their money, not about other Americans. "I welcome their hatred," he said. Landon's supporters accused Roosevelt of destroying the nation's economic traditions and threatening democracy.
The nation had not seen such a fierce campaign in 40 years. But when it was over, the nation also saw a victory greater than any in its history. Franklin Roosevelt defeated Alfred Landon in the election of 1936 by one of the largest votes in the nation's history. Roosevelt won every state except Maine and Vermont. The huge election victory marked the high point of Roosevelt's popularity. In our next program, we will look at the many problems he faced in his second term in office. This program was written by David Jarmul. It was presented by Sarah Long and Doug Johnson, and we thank them all. You can find the entire Making of a Nation series online with transcripts, MP3s, and images at learningenglish.voanews.com. That's our program for today. We'd like to hear what you think of it. You can send us an email. Our address is learningenglish@voanews.com. Or send us a message through our website. Just go to learningenglish.voanews.com and click Contact Us. While you are there, you can read, listen to, and download our programs. You will also find captioned videos and lessons to test your American English skills. Please know that however you reach us, we do read every message you send. While you are visiting our website, you can also read and listen to longer versions of the stories that you have just heard on this program. We hope this program has informed and entertained you and has helped you learn everyday American English. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz in Washington. For all of us here at VOA Learning English, thanks for spending some time with us today. I hope you'll join us tomorrow for another Learning English program from the Voice of America.